Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, Jerry Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on vaccination and this avian flu when we come back. You know, here's an interesting statement. It says, "Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, 'We ought to obey God rather than men.'" You'll read that in Acts 5, verse 29. That's a revolutionary concept, and it's impossible to put into practice unless you personally know the law. Now, can you imagine yourself actually telling a policeman or a judge that the law of God supersedes the law of the state? Well, there are actually three principles of law that support Peter's position, recorded in Acts 5, verse 29. The First Amendment to the Federal Constitution is number one. Public Law 97-280 is the second. And a Supreme Court case called Seeger versus United States is the third. Now, do you know the scriptural law to cite in support of your position on, say, the census, or public school, or Social Security, or vaccinations, or the many other laws of the scripture that conflict with the laws of the state? And do you know how to look those laws up, how to research them out, to code plead the law, to use the scripture to defend yourself against state and federal incursion into your constitutionally protected rights? Now, if you don't know the law of the scripture, and you don't know the law of the state, then you're in no position to challenge either one. Now, if you're tired of being a biblical illiterate with the police and public officials kicking sand in your face, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. Free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, remember that our business and Mosaic Law Schools are both available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org and just click onto the email and then send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this genocide agenda put out by the Club of Rome, the Georgia Guidestones, and I steered you on to a radio program, Dr. Stan Monteith, who puts on Radio Liberty, and you can go to their webpage. It's www.radioliberty.com. It's an easy one, radioliberty.com. And you can probably get this document that I'm reading from. Let's see if I can get you the vital statistics up here in the front. I gave you the web page that's called The Population Control Agenda, written by Stanley K. Monteith. He's a medical doctor. Population Control Agenda, well documented. Let me give you the documents here. The document section over here contains 32 sources of information to support the document, which is 9 pages long. So it's a 9-page document, and he's cited from such people as Bertrand Russell and Margaret Sanger, and a whole host and plethora of people over here that are members of these occult groups, these think tanks, who have a plan that they want to put into operation. They look at the world and they say there's too many people in the world and we've got to reduce the Earth's population. And they're using things like birth control and sex education in public school, abortion. And now we're down to, as one One fellow put it, he says, what we need is a virus. A virus. Well, we've got them, two of them, AIDS and avian flu. Now, there's quite a little story to tell. We'll get to this 1918 flu epidemic as we progress along here in this series, but I wanted to complete this part of the story, the 90% reduction. 90% reduction. Remember, I've said that a number of times. This isn't the only guy that's come up with that number. The fellow by the name of John Coleman, you might want to get this book also. It's called Global 2000, A Blueprint for Global Genocide. Global Genocide. By Dr. John Coleman, published back in 1992, and his address is, you can call, the number is 1-800-942-0821. That's 1-800-942-0821, or you can write to World in Review, that's W-I-R, World in Review, 2533 North Carson Street, Carson City, Nevada, 89706. Again, that's World in Review, 2533 North Carson Street, Carson City, Nevada, 89706. That phone number again, 1-800-942-0821. It's called Global 2000. I don't know what the price is. Make sure you get his catalog because he puts out a newsletter called World in Review in addition to probably 50 monographs. They have a catalog on all of the various subjects. And this guy, John Coleman, was a former British intelligence officer, MI6, British intelligence officer. I met him one time over in Denver, Colorado, in a seminar that he had, and I asked him, I said, my God, man, aren't you afraid of disseminating this information and what may happen to you? And he looked at me like I was stupid. And he said, I haven't told you anything that's classified. Everything that I've revealed to you is public information. God, I thought he was revealing top secret state, undercover, classified, double classified, super secret information from MI6. He says, hell no. That's against the law. I'm just telling you. He says, I know a lot of things that are secret, but I'm not telling you about that. I'm not telling you about that. I reported to you in the last program, hey, listen, the British, are getting ready for 700,000 dead bodies out of this avian flu. Hey, I think these guys know something. I think that they're going to set it loose. I think they're going to turn it loose, just like that war in Iraq is as phony as a $3 Federal Reserve note. And this avian flu happening accidentally, I think, is as phony as a $3 Fed note. I think that they're going to turn it loose. I think it's part of germ warfare. Yeah, I think it's terrorism. But it's not Al-Qaeda terrorism. It's United States and British CIA and MI6 terrorism, which is being carried out by the rich nations of the world because we're the ones with all of the weapons of mass destruction. It's not Al-Qaeda that has the weapons of mass destruction, although I'm sure they'd like to get them. And I'm sure that if they had them, they would use them. The guys that have the weapons of mass destruction, like biological and chemical and nuclear weapons, are the British, the French, the Americans. And we're using them. We're using them against the black population of Africa in the form of AIDS. And now we're about to use them in the form of a neat little virus called influenza. Influenza. And over the years, Americans have become so dependent upon inoculations and vaccinations. I mean, it's like a religious ritual in this country to get your flu shot. That now our immune systems of the people of America are so impaired. I want to give you a number here, and then I'll document this in a program in the future. If you have received 5 flu inoculations in the last 10 years, 5 in the last 10 years, your chances of coming down with Alzheimer's disease is increased by 10 times with 5 flu shots. And what they're recommending here in this country, I don't know about your country where you live, but listen to this, here in America, they recommend that you have a flu shot by age 6 months. And that you have a flu shot every year thereafter for the rest of your life. Now, if you've had 5 flu shots in your lifetime, if the 5 flu shots occurred within a 10-year span, 10 years, 5 out of 10 years, you increase your chances for Alzheimer's by 10 times. What do you think that's going to do to a baby 6 months old who's going to have a shot every year for the next 30 years? I think, statistically, that it will guarantee that you'll have Alzheimer's disease. Now, what does that do to your population? Doesn't that reduce it? And isn't that the objective? You know, I'm just about to rest my case, but I've got more evidence to present, so listen to this. Remember I said last time we'd take a look at the infamous Tuskegee study. Well, here it is. In recent history, we have seen the influence of occultic population control advocates here in America. And nowhere is that influence better demonstrated than in the Tuskegee study. It's a scientific research program in which 400 syphilis-infected black men were recruited by the U.S. Public Health Service back in 1932. Hey, did you get that? 1932. Herbert Hoover was president. Now, the participants were all told that they would be treated for their infections. But instead of treating their illnesses with medicines, all of the medicines were withheld. The black men were given a placebo, then actively prevented from obtaining treatment elsewhere as their bodies and the bodies of their wives and children were systematically ravaged by syphilis and gonorrhea. Now, the evil men who conceived that Nazi-style study justified this atrocity by alleging that scientists needed to learn how untreated syphilis progressed in the human body for a period of 40 years between 1932 and 1972. This genocidal Tuskegee study continued. Now, it was not until 1972 when one newspaper finally had the courage to break the story to the public that the Tuskegee study was finally terminated. By that time, only 125 of the original 400 black men had survived. To this very day, 24 years after the end of that grotesque human experiment, none of the perpetrators of that atrocity have ever been either accused or indicted for these crimes. Now, back in 1932, when the Tuskegee study began, Margaret Sanger's ideas had already begun to infect the minds and the souls of physicians and scientists here in America. According to Margaret Sanger's sense of morality, experiments on human weeds were fully justified in the name of science. Now, do you honestly believe, for one moment, that such an experiment would have been tolerated here in America had the participants been white men? White men? Now, another far more effective method of reducing the world population was devised in the early 1960s by a group of environmentalists and population control adherents. They set out to block the use of DDT for mosquito and malaria control after it had been found that the insecticide was extremely effective in saving human lives. Alexander King, the president of the Club of Rome, wrote, quote, "My own doubts came when DDT was introduced in Guyana. Within 2 years, it had almost eliminated malaria. So my chief quarrel with DDT in hindsight is that it has greatly added to the world's population problem." In 1970, the National Academy of Sciences, in their book, Life Sciences, stated that, quote, "In little more than 2 decades, DDT has prevented 500 million deaths due to malaria." I want to report to you boys and girls that malaria is back. and that malaria is working full bore, killing 3 million people a year. Kills 3 million a year. And it'll kill more as time progresses. In 1970, the National Academy of Sciences, in their book Life Sciences, stated that in little more than two decades, that's 20 years, DDT has prevented 500 million deaths. That's a half a billion due to malaria in just 20 years. To population control advocates, this irresponsible perversion of human life was unconscionable, so they set out to outlaw further use of the pesticide. Up until 1970, all reliable scientific data had consistently demonstrated that DDT was completely safe for both humans and animals. Indeed, DDT was the safest pesticide ever known to mankind. Furthermore, it was inexpensive and could be widely used in third world countries to control the spread of insect-borne diseases. Accordingly, population control adherents set out to have DDT banned in the name of saving the environment. My God, we've got to save the environment, not people. Now, you have probably read the contrived stories alleging that DDT caused softening of eggshells, interfered with the balance of nature, and endangered humanity by entering into the food chain. Well, in truth, all of those stories were fabricated and were simply part of a carefully coordinated program to block further use of the life-saving pesticide, DDT. Now, if you're interested in learning the truth concerning the deceitful campaign that was waged against DDT, let me suggest that you order a copy of my audio-taped interviews with Dr. Gordon Edwards. Dr. Edwards is a world-renowned biologist who led the fight in the 1960s to counter the propaganda program waged by environmentalists and population control advocates to ban further use of DDT. In the same way that they're advancing today this phony argument of global warming. Now, you can order a copy of Dr. Edwards' excellent monograph, Remembering Silent Spring and Its Consequences. That's the title of the book, Remembering Silent Spring and Its Consequences, Dr. Gordon Edwards. Now, William Ruckelshaus was a longtime member of the Environmental Defense Fund and the director of the EPA. He outlawed further use of DDT in 1972. Despite the recommendation of the chairman of the EPA investigating committee, which had heard 6 months of testimony on use of the pesticide and had determined that DDT was completely safe. When Ruckelshaus outlawed further use of DDT, he signed the death warrant for hundreds of millions of the poorest people in the world, the helpless human beings living in the third world countries. To those human weeds, to those energized by the dark side, however, the loss of hundreds of millions of human weeds was relatively inconsequential. In his excellent monograph, Remembering Silent Spring and Its Consequences, Professor J. Gordon Edwards quoted from a speech delivered by Victor Yanconi. He was the founder of the Environmental Defense Fund, and in that talk, Mr. Yanconi related a story told to him by a reporter who had asked Dr. Charles Worster, one of the major opponents of DDT, whether a ban on DDT wouldn't actually result in far greater use of much more toxic pesticides. Dr. Worster is reported to have replied, quote, "So what? People are the cause of all of these problems. We have too many people. We need to get rid of some of them, and this is as good a way as any." When asked by the same reporter, "Doctor, how do you square the killing of people with the mere loss of some birds?" And Dr. Worster is reported to have replied, quote, "It doesn't really make a lot of difference because organophosphate acts locally and only kills farm workers, and most of them are Mexicans and Negroes." Mexicans and Negroes. Now, the footnote on that's number 26. Let me whip over here to footnote number 26. Write this down. What you're looking for is The reported by the chairman, John Rarick, House hearings on the Federal Pesticide Control Act of 1971, page 266 and 267, in serial number 92-A, quoted in a treatise by Dr. J. Gordon Edwards. A taped interview with Dr. Edwards is available from Radio Liberty, as is this entire treatise. See also Environmental Overkill, Dixie Lee Ray, Regionry, page 77. See what I told you, boys and girls, about the documentation? If you want to know who said it, and what he said, and where it's located, and where you can get a copy of it, Radio Liberty's got it. Well, at least they claim to have it. So, I went ahead and I got a copy of this. It's dated 1/30/2000, and remember the title to it is World Population Control. Stanley K. Monteith, M.D., The Population Control Agenda is the name of the document. Well documented. Now, he goes on to say, how many people have died in the past 25 years since the use of DDT? If the National Academy of Sciences was correct in their 1970 assessment that 500 million lives had been saved by DDT over a 20-year period, then we've probably lost well over 600 million human lives during the past 25 years since advocates of population control succeeded in outlawing DDT in 1972. Now, that's good news. I mean, that's good news. Because you can't blame these occult leaders of the population control agenda for malaria killing 600 million people, now can you? Any more than you can blame President Bush, the Republicans, or Tony Blair, or anybody else for a billion or 2 billion people dying from the flu, now can you? Any more than you can blame the Woodrow Wilson administration for inoculating American soldiers with the flu, that is the Spanish flu back in 1918, as being the cause of a billion people coming down with the flu and 20 to 50 million of them dying. You see, it's the perfect crime. I mean, you just can't beat a crime like that. It's like Hurricane Katrina coming ashore in New Orleans. I mean, you can't blame President Bush. The worst you can say is he didn't respond very rapidly. Okay. But nobody's sitting here saying Bush caused the hurricane to strike New Orleans. And if these guys carry this out correctly, nobody is going to be able to blame this avian flu on germ warfare or a mass terrorist attack on the world's population. And I want to report to you that President Bush is a member of Skull and Bones. Skull and Bones is an occult organization. It's a think tank. It is the preeminent think tank. His daddy belonged to it, as did his granddaddy, Prescott Bush. Yeah, there's some skullduggery afoot here, but I want you to understand that behind it all is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who is using George Bush, avian flu, and a whole host and plethora of other events going on in the world. Let me give you from Bible prophecy some of those events. Peak oil has given us $3 a gallon gasoline. Water shortages, that is pumping down the aquifers, like the Ogla aquifer, means that over the next 20 years there will be less food production. Then we have food shortages. 20,000 people a day starve to death worldwide. Did you know that? 20,000 people a day. That's 7,300,000 people a year. Increased earthquake activity, tidal waves, the tsunami that you saw in the Christmas period of 2004. Volcanic activity is increasing. Population is increasing. Denuding of the rainforests. Economic disorders that are unsustainable, such as the balance of payments deficit here in the United States, running $600 to $700 billion a year. Federal deficits of $500 billion a year plus. Wars and rumors of wars. Iraq, Iran, Venezuela, Taiwan, North Korea, Afghanistan, India, Pakistan. Then there's natural disasters like Katrina, Rita, Stan. And last year there were four hurricanes that struck Florida. Disease epidemics like AIDS, which now has infected 25% of 14 countries in South Africa. Did you know that? And in Botswana, 37% of the population has AIDS. 37% of the population of Botswana, 25% of the population of South Africa, an advanced, modern, industrialized nation. 14 nations in Southern Africa have an AIDS rate of 25%. And now comes avian flu, a terrorist weapon of unprecedented ability to kill people. Never before in the history of mankind have we had a weapon like this. I mean, this is, and we're going to blame it on Al-Qaeda, or we'll blame it on nature, or we'll blame it on happenstance. Gosh, it just happened. But hey, listen, you got to admit, George Bush warned us. George Bush stood up in front of the United Nations and he says, hey, listen, we got a problem here with this avian flu. We got to solve this problem. Solve the problem. Boys and girls, these are the people that are in the process of solving the number one problem, the human weeds, 6 billion of them around the world, and they're going to reduce the population by 90%. I mean, these people want to play God. And I got news for them. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is going to help them along with the plan. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, here's the relationship between abortion, breast carcinoma, and population control. Let me offer you another example of a population control program which is being promoted here in the United States today. Many physicians have expressed their concern about the dramatic increase in breast carcinoma seen in women in the past several years. Despite the fact that 18 scientific studies published in both domestic and foreign medical journals have clearly demonstrated the direct causal relationship between first trimester abortion and breast cancer, all efforts to disseminate that information here in the United States have been consistently blocked by those who favor abortion and population control. Now, in the fall of 1996, a new scientific paper dealing with a meta-analysis of 23 different scientific studies on the relationship between first trimester abortions and breast cancer was published in a British medical journal. That study clearly demonstrated a higher incidence of breast cancer in women who had had first trimester abortions. In response to that publication, the American Medical Association, the AMA, the American Cancer Society, the ACS, and pro-abortion population control advocates joined forces together in an unholy alliance to attack the conclusions of the authors and to block all efforts to disseminate that information to American physicians. All three of these organizations mentioned above continue to oppose efforts to have physicians warn women of the risk they face when they submit themselves to first trimester abortions. So before carrying out all surgical procedures in America, advised consent is required except for, you guessed it, abortion. Now the AMA and the ACS, remember that's the American Medical Association, the American Cancer Society, and the pro-death lobby, continue to insist that women must not be advised of the risk they incur when they destroy the life of their unborn child. Why is there such inconsistency? Well, current abortion policies in America are absolutely necessary to reduce our population, and that's why a minor child can be taken from school to an abortion clinic without parental notification, and yet that same child cannot be given an aspirin without parental consent. It all has to do with population control, boys and girls. Footnote number 28. Let me pause right here. Flip over here and show you that that statement, that conclusion, number 28, strong abortion breast cancer link revealed, Washington Times, October the 12th, 1996. Now, you can't say that the Washington Times is the National Enquirer or the Globe, can you? You know, when you're getting it from the mainstream press and they make these kinds of statements and these kinds of admissions, I mean, you're getting right to the kernel in the nut. So, another dramatic example of population control is the tragedy that's being played out in the former Soviet Union today in regard to male longevity. In Russia, the lifespan of the average Russian male has dropped precipitously over the past several decades. The average life expectancy of an American male is 74 to 78 years of age. In Japan, the average lifespan is 78 years. But the average lifespan of a Russian man has fallen from 68 years in the 1970s to 64 years in 1985. To 57 years in 1994, and it is estimated that if current trends continue, the average lifespan of a Russian male will be 53 years shortly after the turn of the century. Now, do you really believe that this shocking reduction in lifespan is happening simply by accident? Now, the true cause of this dramatic reduction in lifespan in Russia will be detailed in my coming book, None Dare Call It Genocide. Yeah, I got to give you your midterm reminder. Hang on here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, remember the homeschooling page at the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and can be accessed through the webpage, remember, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, history, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Remember to order yours. Please call The Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And finally, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications used on this program, and often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite on this program, The Law Hour, are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by The Law Hour or Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of the network or of this local radio station. But they should. But for more information about The Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call The Law School direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, let's take a look here at massacres in Africa. You know, one has only to learn what really happened to the Christians in Rwanda between April and July of 1994 to imagine what may lie in store for Christians here in America at some time in the not-too-distant future. After the Christian Tutsis had been disarmed by governmental decree in the early 1990s, the Hutu-led military forces began to systematically massacre the now defenseless Christians. The massacre began in April 1994, and it continued until July of 1994. Using machetes rather than bullets, the Hutu forces were able to create a state of abject fear and terror within the helpless Christian population as they systematically butchered hundreds of thousands of them. The United Nations immediately convened hearings on the genocide taking place in Rwanda. But our Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, the American ambassador to the United Nations at that time, argued strenuously that neighboring African nations should not be allowed to intervene until the civil war had come to an end. Now, in reality, of course, there was no civil war since those being slaughtered had no weapons with which to defend themselves. It was a simple matter of mass murder, commonly called genocide. So in addition to blocking intervention by neighboring nations, the United States of America, through our UN ambassador, Madeleine Albright, also insisted that the word genocide must not be used, and that the United Nations forces that were stationed in Rwanda were not to be allowed to intervene. And in the 3 months that followed, between one-half and three-quarters of a million Christian Rwandans were systematically dismembered, hacked to death, and slaughtered in the bloody carnage that ensued. Tens of thousands of these Christians were murdered in their churches. Tens of thousands more were murdered in their hospitals and in their schools. On several occasions, United Nations soldiers who were stationed in Rwanda actually handed over helpless Christians under their protection to members of the Hutu militia. They then stood by as their screaming charges were unceremoniously hacked to pieces. Now, at the end of the carnage in late July 1994, the American government rewarded the Hutu murderers with millions of dollars in foreign aid. Strangely, the American press has remained totally silent about the fact that almost all of those who were slaughtered were Christians. And it was the policies of our government that were primarily responsible for blocking efforts by neighboring African countries to intervene. Now, there are literally dozens of other examples of population control programs which have been implemented throughout our world by modern-day Malthusians in their effort to ensure that the world population is dramatically curtailed. Now, to date, it is estimated that far more than 1 billion, that's with a B, billion human lives have been terminated as a result of the worldwide abortion programs financed by the United States, and in addition, we are beginning to see the devastating effects of the AIDS epidemics as this modern-day plague begins to depopulate large areas of both Asia and Africa. Because of the influence of occultic population controllers, however, all logical efforts to address the HIV epidemic throughout the world has continuously been blocked. And rather than utilizing the proven public health methods used with all other diseases, the advocates of population control continue to promote both hedonistic sexual education and condom distribution. In the May 1996 issue of Special Warfare, It's a publication of the John F. Kennedy Special Warfare Center and School. It was noted in the publication that, quote, the immediate future may present other daunting challenges to civil affairs units because of complicated social and cultural reasons. AIDS already infects a high proportion of the military and civilian officials of Zaire, Uganda, Kenya, Zambia, and other Central African countries. In some, or in all of these countries, government establishments may collapse over the next 10 to 15 years. If this pattern is repeated in other areas where AIDS is spreading at an alarming rate, then civil rule may also erode or totally break down in parts of North Africa, the Middle East, India, and Southeast Asia. Let me assure you that there are really hundreds of thousands of occultly engineered people throughout the world today who honestly believe that human compassion is outmoded and that the inferior peoples of the world must either be allowed to die naturally or to be actively exterminated. Now, I will conclude this monograph by quoting from the writings of the English churchman Robert Malthus. He lived from 1766 to 1834. In his famous essay, he says, an essay on the principles of population. That's the title. It's called An Essay on the Principle of Population. Robert Malthus wrote this, quote, all children born beyond what would be required to keep up the population to a desired level must necessarily perish unless room may be made for them by the deaths of grown persons. Therefore, we should facilitate instead of foolishly and vainly endeavoring to impede the operations of nature in producing this mortality, unquote. Now, I personally believe that God expects each and every one of us to become involved in the affairs of this world until He returns. Furthermore, I believe that all human life is sacred. We're told that Christians are to be the salt and light of the world, the preservative that keeps humanity from rotting. And what is the Christian church doing today to preserve the lives of the inhabitants of God's earth? And what are you doing to protect the lives of those that you have or who have been targeted by the forces of darkness today? The AIDS epidemic is beginning to depopulate both Africa and the non-communist countries of Asia. Now that's Dr. Stan Monteith. Let me give you the information again so that you can get a copy of this. Sometimes people ask me, you know, when I make these outlandish statements, and I say, the population control gang is aiming to depopulate the world and to reduce Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. You know, people write me emails and letters, and they call on the phone, and they say, you know, you've gone off the deep end, Gordon. You've got your head up your rectal region someplace where it's so totally out of sight, it'll never be found again. Well, I'd like to point out that I'm a reporter and I report facts. What you're looking for here is the Population Control Agenda, written by Stanley Monteith. It's just the tip of the iceberg. It's well documented, 32 sources of information. I mean, you can be reading about this. It's well put together. And as Monteith pointed out, he said, hell, I'm not telling you anything that these people haven't written themselves. It's Margaret Sanger that wrote this. It's Bertrand Russell. It's Robert Malthus. These are the guys that wrote this. It's the Bush administration, the Carter administration. It's the Runestones in Georgia. I didn't write that. I didn't put that up. All right, you can get a copy of this from Radio Liberty. Radio Liberty, www.radioliberty.com. Fairly simple, Stanley K. Monteith. Now, there's a second guy over here that I'd like to share with you here. His name is John Coleman. See if I can find the little book here. Here it is. John Coleman wrote a book called, a little monograph. It's called Global 2000. You probably read it in an hour. How many pages are in here? Let's see. 23 pages. A little 23 page thing written by a former, I guess he's still an MI6 operative. I asked him about that, and he said, when you join the Queen's service, you are an MI6 agent for life. Now, you may retire after 20 or 30 years, but you're an agent for life. And he's bound by the secrecy oath. He cannot reveal the information that he knows is top secret. And anytime he publishes something, he has to go to his superiors and say, hey, is this all right? Can I publish this? And so here's a little book called Global 2000. Everything in this thing is public information. You've probably never heard this, but it's out there in the public. There's no secrets in here. I mean, this guy's a spook, but he told me plainly, he said, there's no secrets. No secrets at all. He said, I do know some secrets. I said to him, I said, you know, if only 10% of what you say is true, the world is doomed. As the Mugambo would say, doomed, doomed, doomed. And that's about where it's at. I told you about peak oil. I gave you 27 items over here, 27 things that the world is going through right now, like peak oil, water shortages, food shortages, increased earthquake activity, tidal waves, volcanic activity is increasing, population increases, denuding of the rainforest, economic disorders and disruptions that are unsustainable, the balance of payments deficits of $600 to $700 billion a year, federal deficits of $500 billion plus a year, wars and rumors of wars in Iraq, Iran, Venezuela, Taiwan, North Korea, Afghanistan, India, Pakistan, natural disasters like Katrina, Rita, Stan, and the four Florida hurricanes of 2004, disease epidemics like AIDS, which now infects 25% of the populations of 14 countries in southern Africa, and now comes avian flu on top of that, and your president says, what we need is martial law to cope with this avian flu, which could kill 200,000 Americans and a billion people worldwide. And Tony Blair is preparing morgues for 700,000 Englishmen. And this is reported by ABC News. And the president is reporting this to the United Nations, and it's in the mainstream press. It ought to scare the living bejesus out of everybody. I didn't get this from the National Enquirer. God, I wished I had. We're starting to get to a point in time in the history of the world where we're getting closer to the second coming and the great tribulation. You know, we're not too far away from this imaginary battle of Armageddon, where 200 million soldiers are going to fight on a battlefield 35 miles northwest of Jerusalem. Where in the hell are you going to get 200 million soldiers? The United States Army can't field 200,000 soldiers in Iraq. The only place you're going to get 200 million, boys and girls, is out of two countries in Central Asia, China and India. One or the other, or a combination of the two. And what do you think those people are going to be fighting over in the Middle East? Oh, gosh, let's see. You think they're going to be fighting over redwood forests? Gosh, boys and girls, I think they're going to be fighting over the oil that's over there, don't you? Yeah, I kind of suspect they'll be fighting over oil. Peak oil. Now let's talk about martial law and avian flu. The threat of the avian flu pandemic is real. Until recently, national governments and the World Health Organization have dismissed the seriousness of the crisis. The public has been misinformed, and the issue has been barely mentioned in the mainstream media. Why all of a sudden is avian flu on the presidential agenda and in all of the major media? Suddenly, just this thing's been around for 8 years, and suddenly, in the last week or two, God, it's just jumped right to the front page of the New York Times, the Washington Post. It's on all of the news media. The issue was placed on the agenda of the President's White House press conference on October 4, 2005. There was nothing spontaneous in the White House journalist's question to President Bush, which explicitly pointed to a role for the country's defense assets in the case of a pandemic. We're not dealing with an off-the-cuff statement. Both the question, as well as George Bush's response calling for a greater role of the military, had been prepared in advance. Bush's answer was written, and it was a prepared statement. Question. Mr. President, you've been thinking a lot about pandemic flu and the risks in the United States if that should occur. I was wondering, Secretary Leavitt has said the first responders in the states and local governments are not prepared for something like that. To what extent are you concerned about that after Katrina and Rita? And is that one of the reasons that you're interested in the idea of using defense assets, that's the Army, to respond to something as broad and long-lasting as a flu might be? President Bush answered, yes, thank you for the question. Bush went on to say, I'm concerned about avian flu. I'm concerned about what an avian flu outbreak could mean for the United States and the world. I have thought through the scenarios of what an avian flu outbreak could mean. I tried to get a better handle on what the decision-making process would be by reading Mr. Berry's book on the influenza outbreak in 1918. I would recommend it. The policy decisions for a president in dealing with an avian flu outbreak are difficult. One example, if we had an outbreak somewhere in the United States, do we not then quarantine that part of the country? And how do you then enforce a quarantine? It's one thing to shut down airplanes, it's another thing to prevent people from coming in to get exposed to the avian flu. And who best to be able to affect such a quarantine? Bush went on to ask. And then answered his question by saying one option is the use of a military that's able to plan and move. So that's why I put it on the table. I think it's an important debate for Congress to have. I noticed the other day, evidently, some governors didn't like it. And I understand that. I was the commander-in-chief of the National Guard, and proudly so, and frankly, I didn't want the President of the United States telling me how to be the commander-in-chief of the Texas National Guard. But Congress needs to take a look at circumstances that may need to vest the capacity of the President to move beyond that debate, and one such catastrophe or one such challenge could be an avian flu outbreak. Then Bush went on to say, secondly, from his prepared statement, during my meetings at the United Nations, not only did I speak about it publicly, I spoke about it privately to as many leaders as I could find about the need for there to be awareness. One of the issue and two, reporting, rapid reporting to the World Health Organization so that we can deal with a potential pandemic. The reporting needs to be not only on the birds that have fallen ill, but also on tracing the capacity of the virus to go from bird to person. That's when it gets dangerous, when it gets from person to person. And Bush went on to say, we need to know on a real-time basis as quickly as possible the facts so that the world scientific community can analyze the facts and begin to deal with it. Obviously, the best way to deal with a pandemic is to isolate it and keep it isolated in the region to which it begins. Now, as you know, there's been a lot of reporting of different flocks that have fallen ill with the H5N1 virus, and we've got some cases of the virus being transmitted to a person, and we're watching that very carefully. I hope he's watching that a whole lot more carefully than he was watching Hurricane Katrina. And then thirdly, he went on to say, and this is the President of the United States, the development of a vaccine. And President Bush went on to say, I've spent time with Tony Fauci on the subject. Obviously, it would be helpful if we had a breakthrough in the capacity to develop a vaccine that would enable us to feel comfortable here at home. that not only would first responders be able to be vaccinated, but as many Americans as possible and people around the world. But unfortunately, we're just not that far down the manufacturing process road yet. And there's a spray, as you know, that can maybe help arrest the spread of the disease, which is in relatively limited supply. So one of the issues is how do we encourage the manufacturing capacity of the country and maybe the world to be prepared to deal with this outbreak of a pandemic flu? Bush went on to say, in other words, can we surge enough production to be able to help deal with this issue? I take this issue very seriously, and I appreciate you bringing it to our attention. The people of the country ought to rest assured that we're doing everything we can. We're watching it. We're careful. We're in communication with the world. I'm not predicting an outbreak. I'm just suggesting to you that we better be thinking about it, and we are. And we're more than thinking about it. We're trying to put plans into place. And one of the plans, back to where our original question came, was, you know, if we need to take some significant action, how best to do so. And I think the president ought to have all of the options on the table to understand what the consequences are, and all assets on the table, not options, assets on the table to be able to deal with something this significant. Now, that came from the White House press conference for October 2005. Now, what we're talking about here is the militarization of public health. And the statement of President Bush suggests the enactment of martial law in the case of an avian flu outbreak. Martial law could also be established using the pretext of an outbreak of avian flu in foreign countries and its potential impacts upon the United States. In other words, the military, rather than the country's civilian health authorities, would be put in charge. And a decision to put the military in charge of a public health emergency spells disaster, as evidenced by the intervention of the military in hurricane relief in Louisiana and southern Texas. This pandemic is being presented to public opinion as an issue of national security, with a view to triggering the militarization of civilian institutions in blatant violation of the Posse Comitatus Act. The statement of President Bush with regard to the avian flu pandemic bears a marked resemblance to an earlier statement, also at a press conference in the wake of Hurricane Rita, during which the President and Commander-in-Chief called for the military to become the lead agency in disaster relief. Hey, boys and girls, time to wake up. Smell the coffee. Now, a question arises, should you get a flu shot? We'll take that up next time. Remember, in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, 60,000 people elected to ride it out in New Orleans. By the time they had spent 4 days in the convention center and in the Superdome, those people were lined up and said, please, please, take us out of this hellhole. What do you think people are going to say when the avian flu and quarantine and the military are enforcing this quarantine and martial law coast to coast and border to border inside the United States? Won't that be a show? If you think Katrina was a show, wait until avian flu comes. And boys and girls, it's on its way. All right, we're about out of time. Let me give you a couple of reminders, and we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. And we're also heard 7 days a week, but worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, just go to our webpage. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, history, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So thanks for listening, and good night, friends.